It wasn't originally, the bay wasn't originally a department store selling goods to the
population. No, the whole idea of the structure behind the bay at the time, up to say the mid 50s, was to provide a location, not a settlement, but just provide a location where people from outlying camps could come into and trade with it for the goods that they require in order to survive or make life a little bit easier on the land and go back to their camps. It was never intended that we form the nucleus of a settlement. It just it came into being through the advent of schools. Schools was a magnet. In the mid-50s, schools started to be built all across the Arctic, and they became the magnet which drew the people from camp life into settlements type living. And that was a changing process.
And what was traded?
What was traded was it was mostly very basic items: tea, flour, sugar, lard, beef fat. They used an awful lot of beef fat in cooking up dog food, because everybody had dogs at the time. And very basic clothing items, tools, of course, a very important item, nails, slide planks, rope. We sold miles and miles of rope for sled lashings, etc. And outboard motors, canoes at the time, which has now changed to boats, so both aluminum and fiberglass. But basically, it was just very basic items, and everything was conducted in unheated stores. So, of course, at the time, no perishables was handled. It was just plain old packaged goods. Even tinned items were a luxury, and was usually a thing that the post manager and the staff indulged in, rather than we providing it as a trade good, because we couldn't store it. Everything would be frozen.
In return, the company received what?
In return for this, the company received the produce of the land, which at the time, when I joined the Bay, of course, the department was called the Arctic Division, and it was the fur trade. And without the fur, we couldn't exist. And so the main object behind all this was, of course, to maximize the harvest, as you may say, from the land, in the form of foxes, in this area in particular, the polar bear hides, sealskin, and to a lesser extent, things like rabbit skins and ermine. So fur was the thing that we were primarily concerned about, because that's what started the company and maintained it right till the 50s. From then on, it was all downhill. We became more and more of a department store and less inclined to deal with furs. So to the extent now that if we had to rely on furs, we would might as well lock the things up and walk away, because it's a very, very minimal part of our operation. Now we're a department store and trying to operate in this community, much like a department store down south, on a much smaller scale, obviously. So fur was the prime reason for operating here.
What do you see as the reason for that downhill?
The reason for that is Bobby, the erratic market that in the 30s, 40s, and up maybe into 50s, there's quite a buoyant demand for all things fur. But in that time, the ranch fur started to become more and more on its own. And you can't compare ranch fur with wild fur. Wild fur is a sort of a take it or leave it type of element to it, insofar as you take the good, the bad, and whatever the people can produce. You've no quality control, in other words. Ranch four is different. A man can have X number of thousand cages, and he'll eliminate or kill the animals at their prime. In other words, he's getting all his fur in A1 condition. Whereas when you're handling wild fur, you can't do that. You might get 10 to 15% out of whatever you trade as being number ones. The rest are damaged, greasy, substandard in many, many ways, because there are so many different grades that you go into when you're handling furs that it becomes very, very difficult to maintain a high level of income from this hit or miss type of existence. It was okay in the old days, but since ranch fur became the way to go, one thing it saved the industry to a certain extent up here was their difficulty in raising white foxes, and this became more or less a specialty of the north. But even then, it was kind of minimal, because another animal entered into the picture insofar as fashion. We could buy all the furs that the country can produce, but then we're stuck with the problem of selling this, and we can't sell to a public that doesn't want long hair fur. History will show that the money in most of the fur dealings that we've been connected with has been made in short hair fur, which is a non-existent item up here. They're all long hair, and so we're subject to fashion fads. So if Madame in Paris and London, New York, decides they don't like white fox, bang goes the market, and bang goes the price, and they can trap all they want, but they're not going to make too much of a living out of it. So all these little factions pulling at the strings of the economy up here. And since, of course, the 50s, most of it has been detrimental rather than beneficial. And, of course, recently, to put the final nail in the coffin of the fur trade, as we know it, is the rise of these people down south who figure that animals have every much right as a human, and they want to instill in people an aversion to buying anything that has been trapped or shot. So the seal market, thanks to these various groups, has gone completely kaput. And with result, although we're still buying them if we get them, but the chore involved in going out just for the skin alone doesn't produce enough incentive for the average hunter in Spence Bay and elsewhere throughout the Arctic. It's just not worth their while. For $15 a pelt, when you think of the work involved in cleaning and skinning and stuff like this, it's just not worth their while. There is a market for them, but the price is so low because of a generally poor demand, and it's just not worthwhile any longer to do this.
There's the cost of the gasoline too, again.
This is it. The costs have escalated enormously in the last 20, 30 years up here. Some have stabilized, and in relation to the general trend of wage earners, then things have become more reasonable. But even so, generally speaking, things have gone quite high. The cost of equipment, for example, has escalated tremendously. They've gone elevated from dog teams to motorized sleds in the form of skidoos. And of course, recently we've gone to 3 and 4 wheel Hondas, all of which require megabucks to buy and megabucks to maintain. So it's not cheap, the cost of living in Spence Bay, as elsewhere in most of the Arctic. It's quite high. So what the result is that most of the these things are bought by wage earners and not the people who are primarily interested in living off the land anymore, which seems to be kind of a twist, but that's the way it is. The people who are primarily interested in camp life and trying to make a livelihood out of whatever the land provides are the ones least endowed in acquiring the equipment in order to do this. So it's tough.